it's in the air, this could be out. Jarvan's underneath it, will he catch it? He's got good hands, he's got him, yes he has. Jarvan's got him in the deep, having fumbled all night, he's taken the big one.
Welcome to the show, Anjali.
Hello, Subhash. Thank you so much for having me.
It's absolutely my pleasure having you on. Tendulkar in Wisden, anthology edited by you. Isn't this the first time a living cricketer's Wisden anthology has been published? You know, usually it's done for greats of the game, well after their playing career is over and have actually passed.
Yeah, that's right. And so the previous anthologies were done on Grace Bradman and more recently on Richie Beno. And then, you know, they've had a couple of anthologies on, say, like a country like Wisden on India.
Hmm.
But they hadn't ever done anything on a living cricketer. And I think the idea that Bloomsbury basically had in mind was that, you know, they didn't want to time it in a way that it was too soon after his retirement, because there was just reams and reams and reams of stuff published then.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was to just take a step back and lend perspective on his career. And what's fascinating is, especially for me as I was doing the research on the anthology, was to see how it was evolving, how his career evolved real time through the, you know, Wisden almanacs over the years. So that was actually quite interesting to see him slowly develop and really come into his own as a player. So yeah, it was exciting. And yeah, just to say that also, the idea with the anthology was to create something that was just more sort of timeless rather mm-hmm. than the breathless urgency of, you know, 24-hour news cycles and weekly magazines and of course online reportage.
Of course. When you decided to do this, what was your original mental map of the book, of the anthology, look like? And I'm sure it has gone through a few iterations. And what does the final form look like compared to what you started with? Is there much difference at all, or it has transformed into something completely different than what you thought it could be originally?
Good question. I actually started with the idea. I was very clear about one thing, which is that I did not want to simply draw out the chronological map of Tendulkar's career. Mm-hmm. So I started with that premise as a very general kind of premise. And then, of course, the challenge was to think of themes and try and organize it in that way. And so, of course, some phases of his career will lend themselves to sort of a chronography, so to speak. But but what I was more keen on was just highlighting themes that I felt were really salient to his career. And that's kind of the idea I began with. And of course, then along the way, I had to be really clear about what I was willing to leave out if I was going to go the thematic route. And so sometimes I meant that, you know, when somebody has 664 international appearances, clear, you know, the idea is not to catalog each one. So then you just kind of have to pick and choose. So in that, you know, when I went with the themes, then it kind of had to also look, I had to look at what fit with the theme that I was trying to bring out and focus on.
What were some of the things that you found difficult to leave out? I mean, obviously, you know, with such a long career and remarkable career, obviously, there is always a temptation to include a lot more than you would want to leave out. And I'm sure there are, you know, lines that you had to draw saying, all right, I have to leave this out, that you were not comfortable leaving out.
Yeah, I mean, I felt there were a few innings that missed out. I mean, you know, there was one where he had something like 4 for 45 in Dhaka, and that was against Pakistan. I think it was the World Cup. I had to leave that. We couldn't, I mean, more importantly, was the innings in Sharjah, which he played in the final mm-hmm. In 1998 against Australia, which I had to leave out because it just wasn't working with the, you know, because of course the previous innings, which is what got India into the final, is the one that features in the 10 best innings. So somehow the other innings that he played in the final, while I mention it, doesn't get the full sort of match report. Mm. So there were decisions like that, which, you know, I mean, just, it sounds terribly geeky, but, you know, but hey, this is a book of, like, cricket statistics as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the idea was to convey a breadth and to convey themes. but not have to go into sort of like pernickety detail over things that may not necessarily convey the story. And I just had to keep reminding myself that it was okay to do that. And then I was also quite clear that what I really wanted to focus on, which, you know, since Wisden has a wealth of wonderful literature that, you know, and the prose is so beautiful, I was quite clear that as far as the feature pieces go, I didn't really want to tamper with them. I didn't want to cut things. So where I felt I could make those cuts were in the match reports, where obviously the essence of the, you know, the idea is to convey the essence of the role Tendulkar played in those matches. And so it was okay then to, you know, focus on him and leave out some of the other detail without obviously diluting the story itself. So that's basically, those were the challenges.
I have another question for you. You know, Tendulkar as a cricketer, person, inspiration, role model, all this stuff, you know, that's all there. But Tendulkar can be seen through the prism of numbers itself. And it's still a brilliant career, obviously. And on that theme, you know, the book has 248 pages, which is his highest test score. I have two things. Did Bradman's, you know, Wisden Anthology, did it have 334? And whose idea was it to have 248 pages? And did you always work with that being the final count? Or did it was happenstance?
Okay, so it was, I would like to say it was all deliberate and so carefully planned and, you know, like a major sort of orchestrating went into it, but unfortunately, well, or whatever, it was just happenstance, complete happenstance. The Wisden Anthology on Bradman does not have 334 pages, I'm pretty sure. I think it's less than 300. It may even be less than 248. In fact, I might just go and check that after this call. But so that was completely by chance, and it was actually quite all I was asked to do was to deliver an 80,000 word manuscript, which of course ended up being closer to 100,000 words, and then I pared it down as I sort of went along with after the first draft, and so that was basically that's all I was told. That was my brief.
I mean, you grew up in India, in Mumbai, so it's unavoidable that you would be a cricket fan and, you know, Sachin Tendulkar fan at that time that you grew up. And you have covered him as a journalist as well, on top of it. So how hard or how difficult is it to isolate your emotions, your fundamental emotions as a cricket fan that you grew up with when you put together a book? Because there will always be certain leanings towards certain innings that you'll be, you know, you'll fondly look back on, whereas, you know, it may not be that much more deserving. So how do you balance that?
Okay, so
when you make a list, and a summary of a career.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, as I was mentioning just before we actually started recording, I'm a student of anthropology. And the one thing that anthropology teaches you is that it's really not possible to be objective. I mean, anthropology long gave up the idea of objectivity that journalism still seems to hold on to. And I think more people in journalism are recognizing as well that it's just not possible. What we are is really a makeup of our memories, our emotions, how we develop as people. And it's very hard to separate those things. And it's hard even as you know, when you step onto a cricket field or into the press box to let go completely of the fan who grew up and grew up falling in love with the game, to then becoming the journalist that is supposed to assume this role of someone who's meant to be very critical and turns on the critical gaze at anything they're looking at. I don't think I even attempted to achieve some great sort of level of objectivity with this project. I think in some ways I actually saw it when I was reflecting back, having done the manuscript, this is my chance to create the ultimate scrapbook on Sachin. I had a scrapbook as a teenager growing up in Mumbai, where all these precious cuttings and, you know, all the posters from Sports Star, and I had like a proper Sachin scrapbook. This is just this is just the more professional, sophisticated version of that, I suppose, in some way.
So, with that background, you know, you have a chapter called the 10 Best Innings, which includes 3 ODI innings and 7 from Test match. 7 out of 7, I think 5 of them are pre-2000 and 2 of them are post-2000. So your fandom growing up and then covering him, how much of that played a role in you choosing those 10? And what was the, I mean, was it just you exercising your personal choices, or how did you come up with that list?
So I think, you know, I initially drew up a list of 20, and then I kind of pared it down and I thought about it, and I had some help from the team at Wisden, because this is what they do. So it wasn't help meaning just ideas and opinions that I sought, from people who are sort of used to doing this quite a bit. But I think there was, I think we concurred between the 3 or 4 of us who were like talking about this, that what we eventually decided on was the final list. And they were quite happy with my selection. So, I was also quite sure that I didn't want each one to be a century, like, because there are some fantastic innings that he's played that are not centuries. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes it's important to reflect that this is not just, even though, you know, Wisden may be the ultimate book of sort of cricket statistics, it needn't necessarily be a statistical obsession or a statistical pursuit to have like the perfect number in there. So I was quite sure that to me a couple of 90s actually meant more than a lot of his hundreds.
You mentioned, I listened to your podcast with Peter Miller last week or the week before. You mentioned about the two 90s. One was the 90 versus Australia in the World Cup, right? And the other being against Pakistan, is that it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean that, so, and I think that actually, so coming back to your earlier question about, you know, objectivity and your sort of your own personal take sometimes influencing something that you're doing in a book that's supposedly meant to be objective. Mm-hmm. I think that I have such fond memories of that 90, that for me, Siddharth Vaidyanathan's piece just captured it so beautifully. Just the drama and like every emotion that one felt watching that innings and all the memories that you connected with it and how he sort of, you know, the way he did it with going back and forth. I think that was like, that's one of my favorite pieces in the book. I was watching it on TV. I was not at the ground, but the drama of it, I can still feel it as I'm talking to you.
And I was a college student at the time in India, and I watched it on TV as well. So I remember that entire World Cup really, really well, including the 16, the semifinal, and then the collapse of the team and, you know, fire in the stands in Eden Gardens and all that. And very sad day for Indian cricket as well as for any Indian fan that followed that World Cup and Tendulkar. You know, everybody has their own Tendulkar story, favorite Tendulkar story, whether on the field, off the field, etc. And you've covered him as a journalist, you know, we have composed an anthology on him, you've had access to him, you've seen him as a fan in the stadium, on the TV, etc. What is your favorite Tendulkar story?
Okay, I have 2 favorite stories.
The
first, I'll get the professional one out of the way first. Actually, they're both kind of professional, but anyway. Which is, of course, the 103 that he got at Chennai in 2008. And then when he spoke at the press conference. And I mean, just that whole innings, what it meant to him. Because, of course, it was, you know, it's a 4th innings run chase. Not always his strength. He's been criticized for it quite a bit. The echoes of that innings with the 136 against Pakistan in 99 at the same venue. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, step away from all of that and the, you know, the Mumbai attacks. And so I think in just many ways that whole that whole day just has a lot of resonance for me personally. And then he came to the press conference, and you could see how visibly emotional he was, which I, so that was one of my sort of like favorite moments in a professional kind of setting where, you know, you're watching an innings from the press box and then you're interacting with the cricketer at a press conference. The other more personal story was when he was completing 20 years, and, you know, there was just a massive sort of like, drive, oh, we've got to get a Tendulkar interview. And I was cricket editor at NDTV at the time. And of course, there was like this massive chase on, we've got to get Sachin. Everyone was trying to get him. And of course, I was part of that bandwagon as well. Mm-hmm. And then I was trying to reach him. I'd been in touch with his manager, you know, I'd contacted him. And then I was finally, I just said, you know what, I'm just going to land up, not literally at his doorstep, but, you know, just at the building where he lives. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a classic case of a journalist talking. I knew he was at the Nets because I was covering the Nets. And then I knew from the Nets, this was for a game in Mumbai, and it was before a series against, I think it was Australia. I just left the Nets early, and I posted myself outside his building, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to wait here. And the way to do this is face-to-face. I'm tired of, like, you know, trying to text someone and reach them through, like, third parties, all of that. And, it did eventually work out. But, like, that was just the classic case of, like, the journalist stalking celebrity. Moment I'm not entirely proud of.
No. Well, that's your job, and you got the job done.
And he was actually, so the why I really like the story is not for who I was in the story, mm-hmm. but for how gracious he was. You know, he could have been really pissed off about someone showing up at his doorstep and kind of accosting him and sort of with an interview request, one of the many hundreds he must have already had. But he was really calm, and he's like, yeah, okay, we'll do it. And we tried to figure out a date, and we took it from there. But yeah, he didn't lash out. He didn't get upset. Not that I expected him to, but he was well within his right to be upset if he had wanted to.
Since I want to talk about another aspect of it, the Sachin Tendulkar phenomena. You know, obviously he was earmarked for greatness very early in his career, and he kept his date with it, and he kept rolling on. And then there was a point in time where Sachin Tendulkar, possibly the greatest batsman ever, and probably the greatest Indian batsman ever, etc., he morphs into, you know, the god, basically. Infallible, untouchable. Where do you believe, because you covered him closely, so where do you believe that transition happened? Was it to do with the profusion of internet in India, or do you know where to put a finger on it?
Yeah, I think I sort of, I think that I say somewhere in the book that, you know, his story of sort of runs and riches really connects with a lot of aspirational Indians in post-liberalization India. Mm-hmm. And I think that that happened somewhere in, I would say, the mid to late 90s. The 96 World Cup was most certainly the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. I feel very clearly in my mind that's where the legend of Sachin really started to gather massive momentum. And then I think it just, that's when it took off. And I would say the internet and our obsession with sort of looking westward and wanting to, you know, excel on a global stage, and that was happening, of course, through at some level IT and a couple of different arenas, and this was like just the one person in the world of sport who, and Anand, of course, who were really able to showcase their talent and, like, beat the best at their game on their day. And Sachin, at some level, I suppose, more than Anand, not to take anything away from Anand's achievements, was because Sachin was an individual in a team game, but often he was the individual that was winning the team the game. Mm-hmm. And secondly, just the place that cricket has in the Indian consciousness.
I think the post 1999, you know, the 136 against Pakistan. After that, there is a, you know, very clear change in how Tendulkar goes about his cricket. You know, he, and also the captaincy. Once he goes, you know, has the captaincy to go to Australia, comes back, he is dejected with the team, and then he's like, "All right, I'm going to focus on my game, batting, and that is to score runs for the team. That's it, right?" So there is a clear demarcation in his career where he goes from this aggressive young batsman that is taking on all comers to a guy who has understood his game inside and out and just interested in scoring runs. You know, no matter how they come, you just have to score runs. So when going through this Wisden writing and all the writing about Tendulkar, do you also see that in how his cricket is described pre-2000 to post-2000?
Yeah, very clearly. I mean, so many of the pieces talk about the evolution. I think Rahul Bhattacharya's piece mentions sort of from the run machine to like the accumulator. From the aggressive, destructive batsman, he becomes just, in a sense, an accumulator, and in to some people it seemed in quite a mechanistic kind of way.
Which in my point of view that is unfair, because he has just distilled it down to a science rather than, you know, an art where you have freedom to express whichever way you want. But he distilled it down to a science where he realizes his areas and how to go about it, and so he's still scoring with the same consistency, same averages, but taking a lot less risks. I thought the post 2000 Tendulkar was mentally more gratifying than the pre 2000, who was emotionally gratifying.
Yeah, I mean, I completely understand that the change in sort of trajectory and the approach to the game can sort of evoke this nostalgia for what Tendulkar was in the 90s, and explosive and destructive and dramatic and incredibly dramatic to watch, right? So nothing sort of like symbolizes that better than the 90 against Australia and the 96 World Cup, because in a lot of ways that was the essence of how he was playing. And then later on, you see the shift, and you feel like he's switched gears, and he's from fifth gear come down to maybe sort of 3.5 mm-hmm. or something. And I think the two pieces where you get a clear sense of how it was viewed by Sachin himself and within the team are the pieces by Rahul Dravid and Sachin's interview to Sambit Pal.
Yeah.
I'm actually with them on that, in the sense that and with you on that I don't see the transition as a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I see it as quite interesting in his story. And what I also found interesting in the interview which he does with Sambit is he's kind of reluctant to mention, Sambit seems to keep pushing him about his age and, like, is he slowing down and has the reflexes slow down? And Tendulkar is just not willing to admit that. And you do think you do wonder whether all those injuries and the age also determined a change in approach. But he, of course, he refuses to address it that way.
I mean, I read the interview. I've read that interview before as well, and I've read it since I got the book about 4 or 5 times, mm-hmm. trying to understand what Sambit is trying to accomplish there and what Tendulkar is trying to say. And without really knowing what went on in Tendulkar's mind, you have to take him on his word, which is that, listen, opposition's these know your game too, and they are going to adapt to it. So I have to change how I play. If I continue playing the same way, then the opposition is not doing the work.
Yeah.
So I kind of take that approach to him. And it's not that, you know, because it's not a completely shut down that aspect of his game where he goes at the bowling. Every 10 innings or so, he'll show you the glimpse that, you know, I still got it. Like that 175 versus Australia in Hyderabad, you know, he's like, I still got it.
Yeah.
It's just that I choose not to show it to you. So, which I thought was fantastic. So, you know, like, as a Tendulkar fan, cricket fan, reading it, I thought there was at some level some, I guess in media generally, you know, it's easy to write about a personality. Whereas the post 2000 Tendulkar encouraged or pushed people to write about the cricket, the way he was batting, rather than his personality and, you know, a boy on a burning deck sort of thing. But I don't think justice was done to what he was doing on the field, especially post 2000. Your take on that?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I think it's such an interesting facet to the story and how he changes as a cricketer. And I mean, I also don't understand why we expect that. I mean, it seems like there's some sort of unrealistic expectation, isn't there? That, you know, that cricketers and people are sort of bounded, sort of unchanging entities who will always remain the same because, you know, that's how we remember them and that's what we loved about them. And they're not. They adapt and they learn and they age and they have to change their approach. And for me, no one approach is really better than the other. And I say that in the introduction, that while I observe this story with interest, I don't agree with it.
Lastly, I mean, Sachin Tendulkar is, you know, he happened at such a convergence of events in time and space. That has led to this anthology, you know. Would you think it'll be really hard to replicate for someone else coming, maybe the next generation or five generations from now, to sort of capture the imagination of the largest cricket market and sort of become a global icon, at the same time being, you know, the top two greatest batsmen of all time?
You know, I've been thinking about this, especially because of, you know, with the World 2020 going on right now and Virat Kohli and sort of how everyone's just heaping praise upon praise on him, which is very well deserved, of course. But it does make you question how fleeting these things have become, you know, and how long they actually live on in public memory, and you know, calling Virat the Bradman of 2020 cricket, and I wonder, you know, like it made me think of whether people were sort of Sunil Gavaskar sort of fans thought this when people were sort of beating the drum about Tendulkar in the 90s. But I feel like the development of the Tendulkar story, just given, as you say, the convergence of, you know, how things worked then, which was that the pace of the media wasn't as fast. There was no social media. We had only just been introduced to sort of satellite and cable television. Was that development of that story happened at a much, much slower pace than Virat Kohli's right now. And so yeah, I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know if Virat is currently flavor of the season or it's, I mean, in from the fan perspective, I'm not talking about his talent at all. But I think that's kind of a story that you'd have to just wait and see how it develops. My sense is that it feels so things feel so fragmented right now in terms of our attention, which it didn't in the, at least for me growing up in the 90s, I didn't feel like my attention was so scattered or there were so many demands for my attention. You know, Tendulkar sort of had the whole stakes on my interest in cricket. Whereas I don't know if a teenager growing up in India right now feels that way about Virat Kohli. Do they connect with him, you know, emotionally the way generations did with Tendulkar in the 90s. I'm not sure. I don't feel like I can answer that question right now. I think we'll have to wait.
That is true. That's true. By the way, I am in the anthology as well, not by name, but named as a friend. In one of the pieces, the retirement pieces, actually.
So
I'll let you go back and find out which one that could be.
I think Dilip.
Well done.
I really love that piece. I love the last line to it. Yeah. Number four has left the building and in the best years of our life with him. That's kind of how I felt.
All right. On that note, Anjali, thank you so much for being on the show, and I wish you all the very best.
Thank you so much, Sudash. Thanks so much for having me.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about, Anjali?
No, I think that was good. What do you think? Couch Talk.